The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
It is now time for the Gillette Performance Rankings.
You know, that wasn't an All-Ireland winning performance.
Probably should have won the game based on their second half performance.
Is it a step too far to say it was the performance so far of the World Cup? Maybe not.
OTBAN's Performance Rankings with Gillette.
I'm scratching my head. Our performances was just lacked that intensity.
Yes. This is where we count down poor performances to good performances. So we get to talk about both the bad and the good. Finishing with the good. Nathan, we're starting with the bad. Where are we starting?
We're going to start with Tottenham, Jer. Their decline has been somewhat overshadowed by Liverpool's calamitous collapse. But no less damaging what has happened at Tottenham under Jose Mourinho over the past couple of months. They've now lost 5 of their last 6 games. I think it's 3 wins in 13 matches. And when we go back to that North London derby where they scored the early goals against Arsenal and we all went with the old Mourinho masterclass cliche, it has just fallen apart in the most typical Mourinho fashion. Results started to dry up. Goals started to dry up. We've got into the little bit of badgering of the players, trying to call them out. Gareth Bale, who came on yesterday and actually probably put in his best performance in a Tottenham jersey, but they're now 9 points off the top 4. It doesn't look as though they're going to finish inside the Champions League positions. And it feels as though we're in that same old cycle that we know what the inevitable ending is, that Mourinho won't be there sometime, well, probably come summer.
It's an accelerated process that we have with Mourinho this time. You know, normally we get to the end of the second season and we're like, okay. But like, this seems to have been like super, what's going on? And can he turn around?
I don't think so at this stage. Even though they have a lot of quality in that squad, he doesn't look as though he's any confidence in his back four at all. Maybe he's right not to, when Eric Dier and Davinson Sanchez, the centre-back partnership, have never really delivered, but he's constantly chopping and changing. He went through a spell of Serge Aurier ahead of Matt Doherty. Now he's going with Tanganga ahead of Matt Doherty. Doherty came on again yesterday. Doesn't look sure of what his best defence is, and are playing such a negative style at times. They're not creating enough chances for Son and for Kane. Obviously, their goals and their link-up play at the start of the season saw them get into a position where we thought maybe in November that they maybe in a strange season be able to go on and push on and be title contenders. But I remember reading at the time that Son's XG was very much out of kilter with the amount of goals that he was scoring. And, well, the stats never lie, Jer, and it was going to catch up with him eventually. And it has done because they've dried up over the last few weeks. And likewise, Harry Kane is carrying an injury, but they need him. He's their talisman. He has to play every time. And he doesn't trust anybody else. They brought in Vinicius, but he's barely got a look in. So it's hard to see where the turnaround comes from Tottenham.
Yeah, it's unlikely at this stage. And are they wedded to giving Mourinho another opportunity? Or is this one of those summers where the Harry Kane transfer is actually the big one? We're all expecting Mbappe, or we're expecting Haaland to move, but actually there's no reason for Haaland to move this year because his buyout clause next year will mean that he makes mega bucks. It's a possibility Mbappe doesn't move because he wants to wait for what's going on at Real Madrid and they don't have the money. And then actually Harry Kane is the big player this summer because this team are so bad.
Quite possibly, and you'd expect that will be Kane's decision. He may have to force his way out of the club, but you're just talking about a vaccine and supporters getting back into stadiums. Spurs have that glorious new stadium that they spent a billion pounds on. And Harry Kane is the one they want to eventually build a statue of outside of it. So they need him to stay. And a different manager with a different attitude, a more progressive style of football, a Brendan Rodgers perhaps coming in there, could do something different with that Tottenham. Mourinho always felt like a short-term fix, that it was the box office rather than actually the most well thought out of managerial appointments. So if Kane goes, nothing is going to happen for Tottenham over the next half a decade.
Okay,
Harry Kane's come around once in a generation.
You've brought up Brendan Rodgers there. Is Spurs about right for him, where it isn't a club that has the every season track record of qualifying for the Champions League, and so therefore, while the expectation is that you should be able to qualify for the Champions League, there's room for you to take a little bit of time to get there. So it's not going to be the Chelsea gig, for example, where if you don't qualify for the Champions League, you're gone straight away.
Yeah, I think it'd be a really good fit for Brendan Rodgers because also his teams always play a good, attractive style of football. And I'm never totally buying into a football club plays a certain way, but Tottenham again want entertaining football. They want creative football. And I think there's always the backlash of a Mourinho era that you want to see something that you want to go and pay your 100 quid and get a little bit of entertainment out of it. So Rodgers, you know, his record, it's very difficult to question right now. What he has done this season, again, with Leicester, how he's backed it up and maybe even been a bit more pragmatic. We saw that at the end of the game yesterday where all the substitutions he made were defensive substitutions, even away at Aston Villa, decided, you know what, I'm going to shut up shop. We're not going to go and try and push for a third goal. We're just going to take our win. It's not been pretty, but it pushes us up to second in the Premier League table. So let's take it. So Rodgers has to be in the mix for a job like Tottenham. Like, Leicester have been as, if not more successful than Spurs over the last 5 years, but probably always still going to sell when the more traditional top four come in. But whether it's a, is he in the mix for the Manchester City job when Guardiola eventually leaves? I definitely think this summer that Rodgers would be right in the top two, three for that Spurs job.
All right.
And deservedly so.
Okay. Poor performance from five to number four. Tony Finau, the Mayo of golf, it says here.
Whoa. Back up. Mayo didn't make 20 million quid though with all those.
Well, I mean, they had some guy who wanted to give them 20 million quid. I don't know how that worked out for them.
Tony Finau. So he still only won that one tournament, the Puerto Rico Open, which while it's a PGA Tour event, it was on at the same time as a World Golf Championship. So it wasn't even beating the cream of the crop. But he just cannot stop getting into contention and cannot seal the deal. He couldn't have done a whole lot more this time. He's finished now runner-up three times in a row. A couple of them, I felt maybe could have been a bit more ambitious in the closing holes and taken a few more risks. He shoots 64 in the final round. It's hard to be overly critical. And Max Homa pulled it out somehow in the playoff to defeat him. But Tony Finau needs to somehow stumble over the line. His record in majors is right up there. I think it's 8 top tens as well in that 5-year period. Maybe he turns up at Augusta where he's played well before and it all just clicks and he finally gets what he deserves. Because the one thing anyone who works out in the tour would say about Tony Finau is he's one of the really good guys. He's somebody who deserves a victory for his personality, never mind his play. Can but I his ask, play suggests he's got to get it done.
Listening to him, right, as a casual enough watcher of golf these days, this sounds a lot like Park Harrington before he actually made his breakthrough.
Quite possibly, yeah. And maybe he just has that run of form then in a couple of years and gets some majors. I don't think it would be a surprise at all if Tony Finau won a major or won two majors over the next few years. To contend week in, week out, you look at the quality of winners on the PGA Tour so far this year. To be there contending every single week, you've got to be playing golf of the highest quality. There's just something missing. And whether it is mental and whether he's unwilling to push on and take opportunities and risk it all, I don't know. If you're shooting 64 at Riviera, can you question yourself too much?
Yeah. I definitely remember there was that period of time before Harrington won his first major where the narrative around him was, this guy, very nice, but ultimately it's going to be one of those very unfulfilled careers because look at all the times he's finished second. I don't remember. It was double-digit seconds at that point where, and there was the fifth major where he signed for a wrong score and gets disqualified or gets a two-stroke penalty and ends up costing himself victory and you're like, oh my God. And then it's like, no, screw you. I'm absolutely amazing and I win three majors in two seasons. And that completely transforms the narrative around him. So maybe Tony Finau's not really Mayo, he's more Tyrone and he's going to do it over the next couple of years.
Quite possibly. And yeah, that was the... it was quite a weekend. The golf has been sensational so far in 2021. It is one of those sports that doesn't really miss the fans because once you have two players in contention, once you have a playoff and you have the drama, it's just as gripping to watch on TV. The other big storylines out of the weekend were, well, first, Rory McIlroy missed the cut. First time since Port Rush in 2019, he's missed the cut of the tournament. 31 straight tournaments. Didn't play well. It was a course you would have felt should have been set up quite nicely for him. But listen, we'll give him an off week and see, can he regather some form heading towards the Masters? But Tiger Woods was in the commentary box for a few minutes last night. He was the tournament host at Riviera. So he rocked up to present Max Homa with the trophy, and he sat down for an interview with Jim Nance, and it was quite uncomfortable viewing. Tiger underwent back surgery again over the Christmas, fifth time. It was really played down as just a small procedure. Rory McIlroy said that he'd already had it on December 23rd and was back standing and walking by Christmas Day, and that a few weeks off and he'll be back and as good as ever. But the way Tiger was talking, he still isn't swinging a club. He's still in discussions with the doctors. He's got a lengthened putter so he can put a little bit around the house. But he didn't look himself. He looked as though he was someone who was distracted, whose head wasn't in the right place. And when asked about playing at the Masters, well, certainly said he didn't think he'd be playing before the Masters and that he'd have to discuss it with the doctors. But we're 6 weeks away now from Augusta. It's hard to see how Tiger, in the state he was in last night, can rock up at Augusta and play in 6 weeks' time.
All right, well, that's a real shame because obviously having played so well there when the world was normal, there was this hope that maybe he was always going to be able to rock up and play well there and play well in the Open, wherever it is, and, you know, contend to the point where on a Sunday you're like, oh, Tiger might be, you know, who knows? But that looks like it's been stolen from us. Let's move on. Grand performance of the weekend. We're kind of going from red to amber to green. Huge expectations around Harry Byrne. This might have been one of the most watched Pro 14 games that you're ever going to see. Eddie Butler on commentary duty. That was pretty good. I think that they should just make Eddie Butler do all of the Pro 14 games and the viewership figures would rise. So Harry Byrne was playing, Ross Byrne was playing, Brothers in Arms. Ross was doing the kicking, which was interesting, obviously, because if Harry Byrne is going to play for Ireland, he's going to have to kick. And obviously he's not in the squad. That's the other bit of information that has happened over the course of the weekend. He is not in the squad. The squad is exactly the same as it was for the start of the competition. And he was grand. I mean, certainly, like, I see people say, oh, you can't tell anything from this. Like, well, takes the ball to the line. You know, he holds the ball in two hands. He's looking to pass when he's getting tackled, which is, you would say, something that we have not been asking our tens to do a lot of. And, like, what can you tell from a fairly miserable, mucky night in the Pro 14 in Wales? I think what's happened here is that we missed the opportunity to see him play in the Heineken Cup. The narrative has been like, oh, you can't pick him because Entomac had loads of games in the Heineken Cup before they picked him. It's like, well, first off, they have a load of professional teams and two divisions in which they could give a 10 the opportunity to play. That's not the case with us. And also, he would have played in the Heineken Cup if he hadn't done his back in the warm-up to it. So, I don't know. I don't know where you stand on fast-tracking the number 10s, but, like, what we're doing seems to be repeating the same process that we've repeated every four-year cycle, where we don't prepare ourselves for a World Cup, and it hasn't been good enough so far, and our draw in the World Cup is pretty horrific. So, like, we're going to need something random and different.
Well, when each place in the Six Nations is worth $500,000 and the IRFU are in the financial crisis they're in, there seems to be a real pressure financially on Andy Farrell to make sure they go and beat Italy this weekend, but also because of the run of form. If Ireland were to lose this weekend, we're already talking about the end of the Andy Farrell era. So he clearly doesn't feel he can take a risk. You got the sense from his press conference at the end of last week that it wasn't going to happen for Harry Byrne in this Six Nations. But if you're fast-tracking Harry Byrne, what are you doing with Ross Byrne? Because Johnny Sexton's still going to be there at Leinster for the next couple of years. So are you just telling Ross Byrne, well done, you've ticked along nicely in your career. You're, you know, still only, what, 24? But tough, your younger brother's better, so sit on the bench?
I mean, I think, yeah, that's like, and if you don't like that, play well enough to...
But again, if you don't like that, oh, well, no, if you don't like that, leave. But you can't leave to go to another country because then we won't pick you for the national team. So you could go get your game time and improve yourself, but you're going to do that by sacrificing any hopes you have of playing for Ireland.
Well, I think one of the things that they would do is they would try and turn him into a 12 like that, like they did at the weekend. And I guess you need three out halves, right? Especially if two of your out halves are going to go off and be playing for Ireland. So during the time when the November Internationals are on and when the Six Nations are on, those Pro 14 games will continue.
But is that not the catch-22 of this entire situation then? Well, that if you're the Pro 14 guy,
you can
the
never
Pro
play.
14 is such a worthless competition.
You can never play for Ireland.
You can't read anything into it.
Except perhaps when the South Africans arrive and all of a sudden you're playing really good games and you're playing high-profile games. Like maybe this is the unlocking of the Pro 14 is going to give us this opportunity to see players play in bigger, more meaningful matches. And all of a sudden, if you are playing one of those proper world-class club sides from South Africa, you can judge a good bit more from those. I think if you're one of those three and those three are vying and Leinster decide they can't tell who the starter is, then all of a sudden all three of them are elevated to the point where the management can pick. Because Leinster aren't picking Jameson Gibson-Park as their first choice scrum half for the games, the big games that they're playing. And yet he's now starting for Ireland when Conor Murray is injured. So it is catch 22. Ross Byrne's 25 and he'll be 26 in this April. So he's not a kid anymore. This is that mid-20s contract that he's in at the moment where you have to decide, yeah, I am actually going to be the person who's capable of taking this to the next level. So, you know, you definitely feel for him and you understand exactly why the Ireland team, the point you made about the money, like, that's the thing that the Ireland coaching ticket will be asked about in the aftermath. Where did you finish? How much money did we make? Okay, was there progress? Not as much as we wanted. Fair enough, let's go. I don't think there's any chance of them picking an experimental team at the weekend. We'll talk more about this in a couple of minutes' time with Neil Tracy. Quality performance. So the best performances of the weekend. There are some near misses to make our top two here. But at number two, it's Irish Athletics. The micro-elite meet that they had in the Irish Sports Campus. Fairly sensational stuff.
Yeah, it was watching the highlights last night, considering there's no crowd, there's no energy being fed off the crowd, and quite a few of the races have two, three competitors. The level that was achieved was outrageous, and the amount of records that were broken, and incredibly positive heading into European indoors in a couple of weeks' time, and obviously heading towards an Olympics, hopefully later in the summer. Like, where do you start? Phil Healy, once again, sub-52-second run in the 400 metres, a big breakthrough performance for her. Keane McPhillips, 18, one of the runs of the weekend. Longford Ladd ran 1 minute 46 seconds, 800 metres out in Abbottstown, second fastest under-20 runner in European athletics history and the sixth fastest in world under-20s 800 metres history. So there were just a couple of the standout performances.
He went head-to-head with Mark English.
Mark English.
Yeah, and like there's a... I have only seen the photograph, I haven't seen the actual race, but there's a dipping finish between the two of them, and it's like... So Mark English, obviously, one of the best and most interesting Irish athletes, essentially for now the best part of the last decade. And afterwards, he was saying, this guy's the future of Irish athletics. So that's unbelievable excitement.
Yeah, the race itself, again, you just wished that it was... in front of a packed house and the energy that they could have maybe used with that, but to go and to beat Mark English. So, listen, I think there was a lot of standout performances. Schieffer Cleary-Butner smashed the Irish 800 record set by Nadia Power last week at 2 minutes 58 seconds running in the States. Georgie Hartigan, 24 years old, qualifies for Ireland through her Clare grandparents, blitzed the first 600 metres. Held on strongly in the home straight, second fastest indoor 800 metres in Irish athletics history. So the squad for the European Indoor Championships is named today. But I think there's a lot of people who put their hands up over the weekend.
All right. And the number one quality performance, it wasn't really just over the weekend. It was over the course of the entire championship season. We know the identity of the footballer and the hurler of the year.
Brian Fenton and Garrod Hegarty. Garrod Hegarty was, I think, overwhelming favourite for the hurling. It was either going to be Fenton or Kieran Kilkenny, though. Obviously, Killian O'Connor had a wonderful summer for Footballer of the Year. But Brian Fenton, two-time Footballer of the Year in the modern age, the first to do it since Trevor Giles. Five All-Stars to go to six All-Ireland titles, two-time Footballer of the Year, still unbeaten in Championship football. And when we were having that conversation around the greatest of all time, Brian Fenton is already there.
Yeah, I like... It is. The Footballer of the Year thing, for that to happen twice, and that only other one, as you said, one person in the modern era has done it, was fairly remarkable. When you think about that level of consistency, the fact that he hasn't lost a match in Championship football, and just the quality of the performance, the range of improvements that he's made as well, where he can be a possession footballer, but he can also be a box-to-box breaking and scoring goals and creating that run to make the space for the forwards while having that array of passing, the fielding from a dead start, it's just a sensational range of skills that he has, and still very young, still got another 5 or 6 years at least of playing at this level, if he wants it, you know. Obviously he's got a career in physiotherapy and would have been in and around the hospitals over the last year as well. So, like, you know, really hope that he does continue to play out the string on his career, because it's going to be pretty interesting to see what he can achieve. Garrod Hegarty, though, that's like a fairly remarkable story as well. We spoke before about him making the Limerick football team before he made the hurling team, and the benefits of actually being in a senior inter-county setup and understanding what the requirements were. And he said that kind of helped him when he did make it to the hurling side, to get to the level where he's at the moment. And a very different hurler, say, from Cian Lynch, who's been hurler of the year in the past. And it kind of shows you that, again, just how Limerick are not just one thing. They are capable of doing a million different things to you and killing you a million different ways. But I don't know, just great to watch him develop into the person and the hurler that he is.
Absolutely. It was a difficult selection this week for the winners, because there were a couple of other names that we could have thrown in there. Cora Staunton was on OTBAM on Friday. Brilliant interview. Didn't do her any harm, it turned out, talking to the media a day before a game. Goes on and scores 4 goals for the Giants in a big win over the Eagles. So what the Irish women are doing in Australia over the last month or so, it's quite incredible. Quite a few of them towards the end of their careers. Cora Staunton obviously said she's not going to come back and play for Mayo again. But to go over there and be one of the best instantly is a massive achievement for Cora Staunton, and a fitting end for one of the great careers. And then another big storyline from last night, Jordan Brown, the Antrim Ferrari is his nickname, the worst nickname in all of sport, without question. He beat Ronnie O'Sullivan. He beat Ronnie O'Sullivan in the Welsh Open
Ferrari. What the hell is that?
Is it a DeLorean?
I don't know.
I have no idea. But this was, it's been talked about as the biggest shock in snooker history that he won this tournament, the Welsh Open. He beats Ronnie O'Sullivan in the final, 6-time world champion. He started the tournament at 750-1. And it was just brilliant watching him when he had the final break to win it. And he just lets out this fist pump. And you can even get the sense that O'Sullivan was quietly pleased for him, that he could tell what it meant. And O'Sullivan had a bit of a conversation at the end and seemed to have some really good positive words. And then he was just totally overcome with emotion. But 750-1, that just does not happen. 33 years of age, a player who probably thought it was never going to happen for him in one of the major tournaments. So for Jordan Brown, heck of a weekend.
Yeah, that's this week's Gillette Performance Rankings.
OTBAN's Performance Rankings with Gillette.
Yeah, so that's a new slot for you every week where we talk about the stuff that happened over the course of the weekend. Some bad, some good. OTBM live in association with Gillette every morning. Good morning. Start with Gillette. Give me the confidence to tackle the day ahead. We're back talking rugby with Neil Tracy next.
The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.